We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
First, Booger McFarland got crushed for this last night.
Well, these are the type of plays that historically have gone against the Vikings. The Minneapolis Miracle. Plays that are fluke plays that went against this team. I'm sure Vikings fans are saying it's about time we get one of these plays to go our way.
That was after a tip drill. Vikings got the interception, but he said that the Minneapolis Miracle went against them. Of course, that didn't go against them. That helped Case Keenum, go Cougs, and Stephon Diggs get into the end zone, beat the Saints, the Minneapolis Miracle. Look, Booger McFarland, I'm actually somewhat of a fan of Booger. I think he provides pretty good insight from time to time, but he makes these mistakes and the internet just gets all over him.
Yeah, look, I mean, it don't matter how good you are, don't matter who you are, don't matter how many pelts you have on the wall, how long you've been calling games. When you're calling games in 2019, Twitter is absolutely brutal. It don't matter what you say. If you're saying the right things, they're gonna make fun of your accent. If you're saying all the right things and they throw a picture the three or four times throughout a game that you've got to be on camera, they're going to bang on the way your tie's tied or how big you are, how small you are, how skinny, how big your ears are. They're all social media is an absolute monster. I remember one time I was calling a game, guys. I'm calling Arkansas, like, I mean, I can't remember who it was. It was and it was Alcorn State.
Yeah.
And I said Alcorn, vice versa. I got destroyed.
Hold on, you said say it again?
I said Alcorn State.
Said Alcorn?
You said Alcorn.
I don't know which one I said. Whichever one's wrong and which one's right.
Both of them are right to me.
Not on
if
Twitter.
If you're from the South, it's Alcorn hey, State.
Not on
if
Twitter.
If you're from the North, it's Alcorn State.
Right.
I don't know.
I got banged. And then I'm calling the game, and I kept saying, which is, I did it on purpose, but I said, look, I mean, the guy's got some dog in him. You can talk about the technique, the mechanics. You can talk about all that stuff you want. That guy right there's got some dog in him, and if he'll bite when he's a puppy, he's gonna bite when he's a grown man, essentially. Yeah. Well, because I said the word dog and talked about a guy having some dog in him about five times, social media, and most of it was like professional media guys, like, I can't believe he's talking about having dog in him and all. And I was like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
Like, you're caught up on the fact that I talked about a player having dog in him or not having dog in him.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter what you do, man. They're going to bang on you. Booger's on the biggest stage in that world. Monday Night Football in the NFL, and every mistake he makes is going to be absolutely magnified tenfold.
You got to understand this now. Anytime you're a former player and you find yourself in this medium now, you're sure. in a media part, and you didn't go to school to do that, and people feel like you got that role because of what you did on the field and not what you did to get to that spot as far as being a broadcaster, you're going to have some issues and people are going to be very critical of what you do. Booger McFarland, to me, I don't dislike him and I don't like him either per se. Like, I don't really get much out of him when I watch the game. When I watch Tony Romo and I listen to him, I get something out of it. You know what I mean? And so that's what I look for when I'm watching a game. I want to watch it. Either I don't want to be annoyed by what the people are saying, or I want to learn from it. If you can do those two things for me, I'm good to go. This mistake that he made, that was pretty bad, though. I don't know if he was thinking about like the New Orleans Saints or something like that. He's an LSU guy. Maybe he put the fact that New Orleans was on the short end of the stick a few years in a row, and maybe that's – and he got that confused with Minnesota because New Orleans was there at that game. But that was a pretty bad one. The Vikings definitely had a good situation go for them, and that was like one of the best plays that I've ever witnessed in sports, and it went in the Vikings' favor. So he threw that one away.
I'm with you, Wade. I guess as a former player, like when I watch the game, if I'm gonna pay mind to what's being said, it's X's and O's and like why something just happened. I don't need to be entertained, right? I mean, I don't need to be entertained with the fact that you memorize the program. Like, that just doesn't do anything for me. And now that's a shortcoming of mine because I just don't rely on stats and what somebody did 10 years ago to make my point. Now, I wish I did care more about that, I'm going to tell you exactly why that happened. I don't care that he won a Heisman 3 years ago. Here's what happened right there. And Romo does that as good as anybody I've ever heard in the booth. I think Booger does a good job for all things are if you take him into consideration, he's a former defensive lineman, right? And so if your expectations are for him to get up there and for me and Wade to go, well, man, I'd like to hear him talk X's and O's on coverages. I mean, he's probably not gonna move the needle for us too much on that. But he does do a good job. I'll say this: when I hear him, he's accurate in what he's saying. It's not real deep, right? As far as I'm concerned, but he's accurate in what he's saying. I think overall, he does a hell of a job at a job that is very, very, very difficult.
I think Joe Tess and Booger are probably they belong calling games in the NFL. It's probably like a second or third crew for a CBS or Fox, probably not Monday Night Football. Although Joe Tess does have that big game feel. Here's one more from Joe Tess last night on Monday Night Football.
Decaf Metcalf.
It's DK Metcalf. He called
Decaf Metcalf.
He called him Decaf Metcalf. I saw some people on Twitter earlier today apparently like posting their Starbucks pictures saying that their name was Decaf Metcalf.
Decaf Metcalf.
So he didn't do that. Was an accident? That sounds like he might have thought of like a cool nickname for I'm going to call him Decaf Metcalf.
Uh-uh. No, he didn't mean to. That's easy to do. I mean, both of these mistakes are easy to do. And TV, Clint, you've worked in TV. People are talking in your ear. You have your notes. It's tough to tell, like, what's going on here, what's going on there. It's easy mistakes. I like Booger overall as an analyst. He's had these gaffes that the internet's kind of taken by storm.
Who would you like to see in that spot, though? Anybody? Both guys. You said anybody?
Like anybody currently?
Yeah, if you could pick somebody to put – because Monday Night Football has been struggling with this for years now.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a Monday Night Football crew that you said – I thoroughly enjoy this crew in a very long time. So who would you put in that seat if you had the chance to decide who does that?
My favorite football analyst right now is Tony Romo. To me, he's the best in the business. My favorite play-by-play guy is Kevin Harlan for CBS. So if I could like mix and match different crews, I would want Kevin Harlan and Tony Romo.
You know more about Romo's mind too. I think we would all agree that Romo would be the guy for the job if he were available to do it. But the other thing on the flip side of Booger is I don't think him and Joe Tess are a good – I don't think they're a good fit. Like, Joe Tess is really over the top. Like, he really builds drama over and over and over again. And when you watch four quarters of football, it's like
– It's stale.
It's like, bro, you just made a slant from the four-yard line that was a touchdown, looked like it won the Super Bowl, and it was a highlight reel. And he's really good at it. Technically, he does a hell of a job, and I appreciate him – other times, but he it just seems like him and Booger are a tough fit with the two. I don't know why. It just doesn't seem like that's a great fit. I tell you what I'd like. I'm a big fan of is the three man booth.
Yeah,
I like Booger in the booth, but put me a quarterback in there that can talk coverages and throws and stuff downfield.
Peyton Manning.
Nice. you put those guys in there and then a good driver that can and Tess is good. I just think he gets a little overexcited a little bit too much from time to time. But I like the three man booth.
You know who I like that I hear him on the radio though. I think it's on Monday Night Football is Kurt Warner, man.
He's good. Yeah.
Kurt Warner. I think you put Kurt Warner in the booth with a guy like Kevin Harlan. And then you could add somebody else in there. It could be Booger. It could be somebody else. But I think if you had that mix, because Romo ain't leaving. Romo ain't going nowhere anytime soon. They paid him so much money, and they're going to keep paying him money. And so he's going to be there. But I would like to see Kurt Warner in the booth because I think he'd do a hell of a job.
I think Joe Tess does try to be like Howard Cosell. Like he tries to talk up that big moment. And he's a boxing guy, so everything has to be a showcase whenever. I do like Joe Tess, but I agree with you that sometimes it becomes a little bit stale.
Yeah,
sometimes
something
breaks a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, it peaks way too often. Yep. You know what I mean? Like throughout a game. And so it's to me, it's just I love him. Big picture, all the stuff he does. I mean, God, he's clearly a monster in the business because he goes and does boxing. The next night he's doing college football. The next night he's doing pro football. I mean, he's a monster in the business. But just for Monday Night Football, I want to sit, relax, and enjoy the game and maybe hear a little insight that I don't see personally or that I can't see on the video on the TV screen. I don't want to be yelled at consistently. I
saw this number on ESPN Stats and Info about top quarterbacks versus the blitz this season. Deshaun Watson in his career has not always been great against the blitz. This year he's got a top 10 quarterback rating. He's eighth in the league with just under a 106 quarterback rating. He's behind guys like Breeze, Jackson, Cousins, Wilson, Mahomes, Tannehill, by the way, and Aaron Rodgers. But what have you seen from Deshaun Watson this season against the blitz? Obviously a better offensive line has helped out in that front as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall everybody around him is better, but I believe that you've seen him and and Bill O'Brien develop together to where they avoid being put in situations where you're max protecting and holding the football versus a blitz, right? They're using blitz outlets more than I remember them doing last year. But I think the biggest factor is DeAndre Hopkins. I think the moving DeAndre Hopkins, both pre-snap with motions and shifts, as well as lining him up in different places in the formation, some of that stack stuff that we saw against L.A. Chargers, I believe it was, when they won the game on fourth down. They went for it on fourth down and ended up taking a knee. I think that was the Chargers. But some of that stuff right there, the ability to move that caliber receiver around, who's going to be Deshaun's number one target, regardless of where you put him. Now you put him in as his number one target in the quick game. You're moving him. You're creating mismatches. I think DeAndre Hopkins probably has as much to do with Watson's improvement versus the blitz than anybody does in the Texans organization.
Yeah, when I look at Deshaun and his ability to handle the blitz, a lot of it goes back to, does he see the blitz coming, recognize it, and get the protection in a place to where he knows where the blitzer is coming, he can get the ball out of his hand quickly. Because there's been times when a free guy's come open on him, and it's because he didn't realize it was coming. He didn't turn the protection, because that's what the quarterback in this offense does. They determine where the line is going to slide, especially on the empty protection. So when he does a good job of seeing and anticipating it, he destroys it. There's times that he gets caught slipping. That's when he has his issues. And so you see the numbers that he's put up. A lot of that is because he's doing a good job of recognizing the blitz, seeing where it's coming from, and then diagnosing it and getting the ball out of his hands. And so he's done a great job.
Wait, that point that you just made right there, we made it before the year ever started, about when we were talking about the development of Deshaun Watson, right? It's like it's not that he doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, every quarterback out there has bad days. Every quarterback out there doesn't see blitzes. Every quarterback out there gets frustrated and flustered from time to time. It's all about limiting the number of times that he is put in that position. That's the development of Deshaun Watson. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be easy. But limit the number of times that you get caught off guard, or you get surprised, or that you don't know where it's coming from, or that you hold the football too long. The more he limits those times, and whether that's Bill O'Brien and him maturing together, or it's moving Hopkins, or it's the offensive line being better. I think it's a combination of all of it, to be honest with you. But the key is the result needs to be limiting the number of times that he has to make the play like he made this past weekend, where he got away from the defender. It should have been a sack, and he threw the football away, and the Texans go on to score down the road. Limit. It was a great play. Love it. Salute you. Tip my cap to you. But limit that. Avoid that at all costs. Don't salute the fact that you got away from the blitzer and then think that's always the answer. The answer is to limit that number, the number of times that you end up having to do that.
So B-Mac's back after a day of jury duty, and he booked us a big guest tomorrow. Tomorrow
at 3,
he booked us. He booked us a big guest tomorrow at 3:45. We'll be joined by Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Irvin. Prime time will be joining us. He'll have a look at the Texans win over the Patriots in their game this Sunday against the Broncos. Michael, brought to you by Midsize Metris from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham.
JB, do you think he'd be mad at me if I asked him about the White House tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I believe he would.
I mean, I grew up around that, so I just want to know, like for real, like what was those parties like, man?
Yeah, that would be fun to know. Maybe off the air. Coming up next, I want to take a look. College football playoff rankings coming out tonight. Big debate on who should be number 5, because that number 5 might slip into the playoffs with a Georgia loss against LSU. Also, let's take a look at the college football coaching carousel that's heating up. Mike Leach had a rant after his loss against Washington State. That next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. We just get done bashing the guys on Monday Night Football for having a moment terror, just a quick moment of where they made a mistake. A mistake moment for the Monday Night Football guys. And you guys let me get by calling Michael Irvin primetime instead of the playmaker. I called him the playmaker earlier in a text message, so I know what I'm doing. I can't believe you guys. Yeah, I don't tell that to our boss. I can't believe you guys let that slide, though.
Hell,
you guys
I didn't catch it, man. I was too busy thinking about asking the question about the White House.
And yeah.
That got poo-pooed really quick, so that I'm not going to be able to ask that question tomorrow. Maybe off air, I just asked him, like, hey, man, just tell me what it was like.
Yeah, I ain't going to lie to you. I just flat-ass wasn't listening.
It's half of our problem. The playmaker, Michael Irvin, will be joining us tomorrow at 3:45. So the college football playoff rankings will be unveiled tonight. tonight. Big night, because this is the week heading into the college football championships, and it goes a long way in kind of tipping the hand on what the college football committee is thinking. To me, the biggest question is Utah or Oklahoma, who gets the number five spot behind Georgia at number four? Because if Georgia loses to LSU, they're going to drop out. I think that, you know, LSU, Ohio State are locks. I think even Clemson at this point is a lock, even though their strength of schedule is so bad going into this weekend. But if Georgia loses to LSU, they're underdogs, and if that happens, the question becomes who gets bumped up between Utah or Oklahoma. So you get an idea of the college football committee, who they rank at number five tonight, what their line of thinking is. So when I throw that question out there, Utah or Oklahoma, who's more deserving of the number five spot?
Well, the question is when LSU skull drags Georgia.
When? Okay.
I mean, Georgia's already the underdog, and Georgia, they're already down one receiver, another receiver, I believe, because of the fight at on the goal line, and which carried into the back of the end zone and up against the wall. I believe he suspended a half a game at the very least at this point. So they were already shorthanded at the receiver position, and now Jake Fromm is throwing to guys that he doesn't have a ton of experience throwing to. So, and I believe DeAndre Swift is yep. injured, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's playing or not, but I think he's banged up. But nonetheless, I just think LSU is going to be way too much for Georgia. So not if they win, but when they get skull drugged by LSU.
Fair enough. Yeah, but who do you think should be five?
I think
he's not listening again. I'm listening.
There's no doubt. I think OU. Your question, OU or Utah? I think it's hands down OU, assuming they both went out.
Okay. Yeah, I tell you what, man. When you look at the situation, you look at Utah, you look at who they've played. To me, they're not even in the same conversation, I think, with Oklahoma. I know both teams have played kind of weak schedules. You look back on it and you say, well, the Big 12 and the Pac-12, both of them are weak. But when you have to match up against either LSU or Ohio State in that first game, you're trying to find the team that's going to give you the best potential matchup in that ball game and the best potential game that's viewable. Because when you just look at it, you might say to yourself, well, whoever's that four seed is going to get blown out anyway, and you might be right. But when you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, you look at CeeDee Lamb, you look at Oklahoma Sooners, to me, they give you the best opportunity to have a team that's going to actually put up a fight with either LSU or Ohio State, whoever ends up being the number one overall seed. I don't think Utah would give them a game at all. Utah lost to USC. I mean, at the end of the day, that should just explain everything. Utah lost to USC.
Yeah.
And so when you put that all together, USC's coach is getting ready to get fired. You get beat by that team. I just don't feel like you belong in the conversation to be in the college football playoffs. I know if that's the case, to me, I think the loss that Memphis had against Temple is a more legitimate loss than losing to USC. USC has a better record than Temple, but Temple, you're on the road at Temple. I think that's the same category. And the Memphis is nowhere near the conversation. They shouldn't be in the conversation to go into the college football playoffs. So I don't think you should include Utah in it either.
The countering opinion would be, well, Oklahoma lost to Kansas State. They're unranked, whereas USC, not having the year that people at USC want them to have, they're still in the top 25, so they would point to that being a better loss than what Oklahoma had. That said, I go Oklahoma no problem. Oklahoma is the 22nd ranked strength of schedule. Utah's at 54. OU's 4-1 against the top 30. Utah's 1-1. And OU also plays the better opponent this weekend in Baylor, who's in the top 7 probably after today. Utah plays Oregon. I saw some strength of schedule or strength of conference numbers earlier today. The AAC West, Memphis, your Memphis Tigers, my Houston Cougars, SMU, you have them in that division, Navy as well. They rank higher than the Pac-12 South, where Utah resides. So I have no idea how Utah is currently ahead of Oklahoma, and I hope that the committee flips that tonight. We mentioned LSU and Ohio State are locks. I think Clemson might be too. We'll see. They play Virginia this weekend. Anyways, Dabo, they beat South Carolina this past weekend. He got asked the question if that was a big game, and he was like, yeah, it was a big game.
How important is this game?
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, it's huge from a national standpoint because, obviously, if we lose this game, I mean, they're going to kick us out. They don't want us in there anyway. we'd drop to 20. You know, I mean, Georgia loses to this very same team, and the very next day it's how do we keep Georgia in it? We win to the team that beat South Carolina, and it's how do we get Clemson out? It's the dadgummest thing. So it's big because, you know, they can't vote us out. I mean, we got to go 30-0. I mean, we ain't got no choice because we don't play nobody. So mean, it's big from a national standpoint, but it's huge for this state, and it's huge for our program.
That was after the win against South Carolina. You can tell Dabo there posturing a little bit. Just in case they lose to Virginia, he's putting it out there that, hey, we should still be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, look, I think he feels disrespected for the fact that they won it all and the fact that they won it all in convincing fashion. And now with every little bit of slip-up, even though they're undefeated, every little bit of a slip-up to where you don't live up to the expectations of the college football playoff committee, you get bumped down a notch. And if you're in Dabo Swinney's position, it rubs me the wrong way, the way that they rank teams, you know, like the Georgia thing right now. Like the Georgia, that is only ranked that way because they know it has to work itself out, right? Either Georgia plays its way in and beats LSU and everybody goes, well, yeah, that's why they're there. Yeah. Or LSU beats the breaks off of Georgia and Georgia gets bumped out and nobody discusses it. To me, that rubs me the wrong way. I get it. I understand why, but it rubs me the wrong way. It's not an accurate ranking. And when you start bumping Clemson down and moving them around simply because they had to win in overtime or they stopped the team on a two-point play mid-season, and it's the wrong way to go about things. And so I don't have a problem with him particularly specifically bringing up the fact that Georgia lost to South Carolina and still up there.
We're talking about the difference between Utah and Oklahoma. Let me ask you this question. We're assuming if Oklahoma is going to win this ball game against Baylor. Now, if Baylor wins this ball game, do they deserve to be in over a Utah?
I would say for sure. They have a better strength of schedule. They'd have better quality victories, and they would their losses are a lot better because it'd be against Oklahoma. I would say yes. The committee would say no, though.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think the committee would say no?
Just because they've had Utah ranked higher than Baylor all of these weeks. It shouldn't matter. They should throw out the previous week's rankings before they do a new ranking each and every week. But I just feel like the committee's pot committed to their previous rankings. So I don't think Baylor would jump them.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think Baylor would jump them either. It's unfortunate, Wade, but I think there is a brand awareness. There is a brand value to where OU, Bama, Clemson, the Floridas, the Texas, the Notre Dames, the USC's of the world, those teams get the benefit of the doubt in these types of situations. There's no doubt about it. So the question comes now: is it Utah? Is that being an West Coast football team? Now is that audience big enough to overcome putting Baylor in there? I think those are factors that are legitimate factors in who they put in.
And I have serious doubts that would be the case. I mean, Utah is not a perennial power.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree.
So I'd be interested to see how that would shake out. Another thing that would be interesting to see is if LSU loses to Georgia, how do they rank the top four teams? Does it go Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, LSU?
Well, that'd be interesting. I think I would keep it. Well, yeah, probably. Probably. Georgia would have the recency bias victory over LSU. So, yeah, I think that'd be the top
There's
four.
No way you bump LSU out and put OU or Utah or Baylor.
That's
in.
What I'm saying. So they would be fourth.
They would have to be fourth.
But
yeah.
You couldn't,
there's no doubt.
But you couldn't pick them ahead of Georgia, right? Because Georgia just beat them. So you'd have to have Georgia higher than LSU.
That's splitting hairs. Right. You know, I don't know at that point in time. But to bump LSU out after a one-loss season that happens to be the championship, and they're convincing. Can you watch the product? I mean, Ohio State and LSU there is no doubt about it. They are two of the top four teams in this country and should be in the college football playoffs regardless of what happens in a championship game. That's two of the top four playoffs, no doubt about it. To me, it's not even a debate.
Listen, this is the one year that I feel like it should be like the old days where the top two teams end up playing in a national championship and that's it.
You'd be leaving out Clemson, though.
But when you make a great point. You make a great point because Clemson has been a team, and that's kind of what Dabo was talking about. People just forgot about Clemson. Once they almost lost their game in North Carolina, kind of wrote them off. But they've been blowing out teams throughout the season. So you make a good point there. I mean, I forgot about them again when we just mentioned that because I was thinking to myself, it's just LSU and Ohio State. But Clemson has a right to be there in the mix. They're the defending champion. So we'll see what happens when the rankings come out tomorrow. Or is it tonight or tomorrow?
Tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
Dabo was talking to you in that rant. Relive the Texans-Patriots game with us. Stern Talk Live tomorrow night at 7 inside the Verizon Artist Lounge here at 59 in Westland. Free food and drinks. Clint Sterner will host. We break down Texans film and explain how Houston's playing as well. Clint, What are you going to talk to the guys about?
Man, look, this is a great week because I usually got to try to structure this thing in a certain way to make it make sense to the viewers, right, to the fans. And this is a game where the defense disguised a bunch of looks. It's going to be really fun to unpack how exactly they disguised it and how they doubled Edelman and how they frustrated Brady. And then on the offensive side of the football, the way they used the tight ends and used Duke Johnson in the pass game and then came out in the second half and bombs away, took a couple of shots that ended up sealing the game. How did they do that? The X's and O's, the inside of how they accomplished it is going to be really, really fun to break down in a way that everybody can understand. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Going to be a fun night.
That'll be fun. Also, free food, free drinks. Can't go wrong with that. Win your VIP tickets by going to sportsradio610.com/live and register to win or listen for the queue all day today at 13 after every hour. Your next chance to win next hour at 5:13. Stern Talk Live tomorrow night exclusively from Houston sports leader Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, Nick Caserio, according to Ian Rappaport, what does that mean for the Houston Texans and that inner circle heading into the offseason? Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham on Houston sports leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. Texans made a minor move today. Bill O'Brien and the inner circle have signed Nate Hall to the practice squad, rookie inside linebacker for Northwestern. They drop a preseason hero, Jarrell Adams, released from the practice squad today. They have three tight ends that are playing well. Darren Fells setting the single-season Texans record for the most touchdown catches by a tight end. Jordan Akins has looked good. Jordan Thomas looks nice and healthy coming off of the injury as well. Well, we saw the news early Sunday before the Texans even thought about kicking off later that Sunday night. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network saying that no Nick Caserio. It's not going to happen. The general John McClain, by the way, was with our guys in the loop, Landry Locker and John Lopez earlier today, says that it is going to happen. So you have a local legend against a national media type, conflicting stories. But it looks like Bill O'Brien has at least had a taste of the power of being a GM and his other friends, and he's liked the power of being a general manager. It might not be the smartest thing going with this in the future with Bill O'Brien and the panel, but I will tell you this. It will be the most entertaining thing because it's a lot of fun to watch Bill O'Brien will and deal.
Yeah, look, I mean, last time we talked about it, it was yeah, he's coming, and I said, guys, it's gone so well to this point that there may be a possibility that they are completely happy and don't want to add another element, another personality, another opinion to the group, and I still stand by that. I don't know that it's a slam dunk get, even if he is available, that they bring him in. When something works, we've talked about it multiple times, and we've saluted the job Bill O'Brien, the GM, and this panel has done. But seriously, we've probably not given it enough time. It's been unbelievable how many guys that they've hit on at the right time, and then how those guys have contributed in a critical time in the season for this organization. So it's not about just acquiring a couple of players and having a good draft. It's about you're backed into a corner. It's week six. You literally have lost your top two corners and your third guy's banged up. You got to go find a player, and they've gone and found players, and those players have come in and made critical games in the fourth quarter to help seal the deal in a game. I mean, it's been awfully impressive what Bill O'Brien, the GM, and his panel has been able to do.
Yeah, they put together – you got to give a lot of credit to the pro personnel department. You got to give credit to a guy like Romeo Crennel. You look at all of the defensive players that have been brought into the fold and been able to plug and play and be productive for this defense ever since this season has started. You got to give props where they're due. Now, when you talk about the situation, do I think that Caserio is going to come here? I still believe that that's going to happen. When everything that they went through to try to get him here, the fact that they had to deal with the tampering charges, and it makes too much sense to me that he would want Caserio here. I don't think that relationship is fractured at all. I think those guys still want to work together. And once he becomes a free agent, he's going to want to come here. I think his mind was already made up if it got to that point, because I really believe if the Patriots didn't have any feel or belief that Caserio was going to actually come here, it wouldn't have been a big deal. This, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, you got to think about it like this. Everybody here, you have wives. You have a girlfriend.
Just one.
We have wives. You have a wife, Jeremy. You have a girlfriend, Clint. If your wife or girlfriend is walking down the street and somebody says, "Hey, how you doing?" to your wife, and you don't think that they're going to, your wife is, if you trust your wife, you ain't going to trip about somebody saying, man, she's an attractive woman. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they came at them in a disrespectful manner. You just be like, oh, yeah, you know, she walked down the street. Somebody noticed that she was attractive. They said they were attractive. But it's not like you're going to get up in arm because somebody shot their shot at your wife. That just is what it is. I think that there's a lack of trust there between Bill Belichick and Caserio because Bill O'Brien legitimately had an opportunity to take him away from him. And so I think that that's still going to happen. I think it's still going to come true. And I think that they knew coming into this scenario that Bill O'Brien was going to have a certain amount of influence and decisions that are going to get made if he came. This is before him having an opportunity to do it now. Yeah. And I think it'll still be the same way when he comes next year. But that's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, you got to be really – what you got to be worried about is when your wife or your girlfriend walks down the street and nobody takes a shot at her. That means you time to make a change right there, boys. But no, I mean, look, when you talk about Caserio.
She's only – go to the lefty. Call him the pin.
There's only got to be one person she's got to impress, man. That's what I tell people all the time. I know one person that like it. You know what I mean? There's somebody out there that loves me and likes me, and that's my wife. That's all I need to impress, man.
Hey, I'm with you, Bubba. It's just sometimes you got to call it like it is. Hey, but here's the deal, too, on the Caserio deal. I always go back to when we had Steve Mariucci on, and he talked about his time in Frisco, and he said that the season was not a problem. Making all the moves during the season, coaching the football team was not a problem. I believe they won 12 games that year and went to the playoffs. But he did say late in the season, when it came time in season to start discussing plans for the draft and all the off-season things that come down the pipe immediately as soon as the season's over, it became really overwhelming. So that always sticks in my mind when we have this conversation. And so I wonder if there's the panels in place. Is there somebody there that can alleviate those issues from Bill O'Brien until the season's over? Or is there a true need for a GM in those scenarios to alleviate that issue from Bill O'Brien until the season's over? So it just, when Steve Mariucci said that, I was like, okay, well, they're all right for the time being. But boy, late in the season, when you get to game 12 and game 13 and 14, things could get awfully hairy if there's not a plan in place, which again, I fully believe there's a great plan in place, but can it be executed without that figurehead that's a GM?
I like that Bill O'Brien is the general manager. To me, I've been impressed, with the exception to the Jadeveon Clowney trade, with Bill O'Brien improving this roster. Sometimes he can get a little over-aggressive, like trading a third rounder for Duke Johnson. Industry experts said that was too much. But you're getting good play from Duke Johnson. They said it was too much for Laramie Tunsil, but you've improved this offensive line. The secondary, really, overnight, is a lot more talented than it was in the offseason. I feel like Bill O'Brien and the three friends have done enough to at least get a full-time opportunity at being the general manager. I would be excited about it. I also don't think what the Texans are doing is that unique. I think it's unique that they've talked about it publicly, that yes, it's Bill O'Brien and three other guys forming the panel, and they're making all of these decisions. But think about all the other 31 teams in the NFL. They might have the figurehead, the GM, which the Texans have the figurehead in Bill O'Brien, but they all have other guys that report to them. They all have guys that are working with the college scouting and guys that are looking at the NFL scouting. I think the fact that the Texans have talked about it and said what they're doing is the most unique thing. I don't think it's that unique compared to how other front offices work in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I think initially when this came up, I think the response, at least from the fan base, is, oh my gosh, who's going to be making decisions? What's the plan? And all along, I'm going, guys, to think that there's a panel over there and Bill O'Brien over there and there's not a plan in place. Now, that may not work. It may be an absolute dumpster fire, but there is a plan in place for trading players, acquiring players, for working on the draft, for working on everything from travel to game plan throughout the season. I mean, there's a plan in place for all of those particular issues. It may not be what everybody's doing throughout the NFL, but there is a plan in place, and there is a very highly paid individual over there that's responsible for organizing and very thoroughly vetting processes and individuals. And so whether it works or not, we'll see. So far, it's worked beyond expectations, and so it's been a good thing so far. We'll see as this thing unfolds and the season rolls on, and more is demanded from those guys. We'll see how it works out come playoffs and then off season.
It's a huge offseason for the Texans, too. Like, this season, 2019, the Texans are worried about that. They're looking at winning the division title, making a deep playoff push, trying to be a contender for the Super Bowl. But we're talking about Nick Caserio, reportedly by Ian Rappaport, not coming to the Houston Texans in the offseason. The Texans will continue doing what they've been doing this season. You look at the players that are under contract that are running out at the end of the season, it's a big year. $77 million under the cap. Deshaun Watson's entering his final non-option year of his rookie deal. Whitney Mercilus is without a contract next year. Jonathan Joseph, no contract. We'll see. Bradley Roby, DJ Reader, Carlos Hyde, Darren Fells, and like I mentioned, $77 million under the cap. Now you still have to get some deals done with the current players here. So this is a big offseason coming up for the Texans. A lot of trust to give to Bill O'Brien. I think he's earned it. I think it'd be fun to watch the offseason hot stove with Bill O'Brien. It'd be entertaining, I think.
Well, the entertaining aspect of it is this, is that if he doesn't make hay this year and next year, and when I say that, I mean make a significant improvement this year and then continue to improve next year and be a true contender from the jump next year, then all that doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I don't think that what's going on now with the Houston Texans is taking things 2 years down the road into consideration. I mean, obviously with the trades and trading away first-round draft picks and, like, the development days of the organization are over. The building days of the organization, that those days are over. Now, yeah, you got to get some guys under contract, but building a winner, it's done. Like, it's all that's left to do is to keep the team together, keep the pieces together and continue to improve, and hopefully sooner rather than later, you put yourself in a position to make a serious run at a title. And so for me, Wade, it's like the building is done, man.
I'll tell you what, man, when we're talking about this, I feel like we're diminishing the actual role of what the GM does and how important it is in an organization. When you look at it, the Texans have a lot of people that are in places that do an excellent job, and so it's making it work right now and things look good right now. But I think the more autonomy that each one of those individual pieces have and they're more dependent on without someone that is they directly report to on a consistent basis, that can come back and backfire on you very, very quickly. And when you're the head coach and you're focusing on being the head coach and then you have to do that other side of it and you continue it over years, I think it can start to wear on you, I think. And so that's the reason why Bill Belichick has Nick Caserio. The genius, the ultimate genius in the NFL does have Nick Caserio. So if he's good enough for Nick Caserio, why would he not be good enough for Bill O'Brien? To me, that's the part of it that doesn't make sense.
And if he's good enough for Bill Belichick, why would he not be good enough?
Yeah.
You said Nick Caserio, but go ahead. You said if he's not good enough for Nick Caserio, why would he not be good enough for Bill O'Brien? But you meant Bill Belichick, right?
Right. If Bill Belichick needs Nick Caserio,
why wouldn't
Bill O'Brien need Nick Caserio? Gotcha. To me, that's the part that it makes sense that he would come here. Like I said, it's working now in the short term, but I think in the long term, it'll start to catch up with you. So that just, to me, that solidifies my thought process of why he's going to come here. He wants to come. They tried to get him to come. It didn't work out because the Patriots needed Caserio. Think about it. The Patriots, the reason why I think they put up a really big fight about this situation is because Greg Schiano was supposed to be the defensive coordinator this year. They already lost Brian Flores. He was the head coach at the Miami Dolphins. Schiano was supposed to be the defensive coordinator. He quits after a few days. And at the same time, the Texans are reaching and trying to take their guy. So Bill Belichick had to take over those defensive coordinator roles. That's more on his plate. So if you lose your defensive coordinator and your GM per se, even though you have the final decision, that makes things that much tougher on you.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at it from that perspective, it makes absolute sense that he would come here and be with the Houston Texans.
So your defensive head coach in New England all of a sudden had to take over defensive coordinator duties because his son clearly is not the one pulling the strings on that defense.
Right.
Right? And then on the flip side of it, had he lost his GM, then he'd have to do his duties as a GM would have went up as well. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you're right. Lil Belichick needs a haircut, man. Come on.
The way I look at Caserio, like though, he does look like Joe Dirt. The way I look at Caserio from a Belichick perspective, though, is like Bill Belichick's not going to let value walk out of the door for free. And like he has Nick Caserio under contract. He's going to keep him as long as possible while he's under contract. His contract does come up at the end of the NFL draft. If I'm Nick Caserio and I'm putting myself in his shoes, I don't want to go. I don't want to be with the Patriots. I don't want to be with the Texans, to be honest with you. Like, we talk about Caserio and his destination in 2020, that it's either the Texans or it's the Patriots. It's either or. If I'm a guy who wants to be a general manager in the NFL and I aspire to be in control of the entire 53, I don't want to be with either guy, because Bill Belichick's going to have final control of the 53 in New England, and it looks like Bill O'Brien's going to have the final control of the 53 in Houston. If I'm a GM and I want to build my own franchise and my own organization, I'm looking for another place. I'm looking for Carolina, who looks like they might have a front office turnover. I'm looking for another team around the NFL where I can be the authority figure of that organization.
Well, I mean, there's nothing to guarantee that you're going to be the authority figure in that situation. That's the scary part of it is I would like – I think it's a very safe – place for Caserio. It's a change of scenery. It's clearly stepping into a role with a bunch of his peers that he respects and that he has a history with and that he has chemistry with. And I just think that's very rare in sports, period. Whether you're a player or you're an administrator, I guess is that the right word, a GM or part of the panel, if you know you're stepping into the fire with guys that you have great chemistry with that you can trust, that's extremely valuable, man. And that's why when I keep hearing people talk about like the Texans, is that it's not an ideal destination for a GM. That baffles me. It's one thing to say, well, there's another place that's better, but when you don't think that it's that Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt and all these guys, Hopkins, like having control of this roster and that's where you start is, to me, that's much more appealing than dysfunction throughout an organization like in Jacksonville. Like, to me, that's much more appealing than to try to rebuild a dumpster fire.
I would say the names that we were talking about that Bill O'Brien has to look at this year, or maybe it is Nick Caserio when it's all said and done. But of those names that we mentioned of guys whose contracts are running out, Darren Fells was one of the names we mentioned, Bradley Roby, Jonathan Joseph, maybe he'll retire. DJ Reader is obviously a big one, Carlos Hyde. Whitney Mercilus is one that I don't think is going to be a Houston Texan next year. He's going to be 30 years old. That's kind of on the downside of a career in the NFL. He doesn't have a full sack since week four. Remember, he got off to that hot start. He's had half a sack since week four. Jacob Martin, by the way, has 2.5 in 2 weeks, so he's kind of emerging. Not at the level that Whitney Mercilus is at now, but he's cheaper. He's younger. Mercilus is going to be somewhat expensive to bring back. It wouldn't shock me if Whitney Mercilus, of those names that we mentioned, isn't a Houston Texan next year.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I'm torn on this because I think I would say it would shock me because he strikes me as a guy that's a Bill O'Brien guy through and through, both as a player, as a do-your-job player, and as a do-your-job teammate. And so assuming that that number – that he commands on the open market isn't just absolutely through the roof and the Texans are just like, now we can't pay that guy that kind of money for the production that he's given us, then I think he remains a Houston Texan for the rest of his career. Now, if somebody comes out there and throws a boatload of money at him thinking that he can go in and change an organization with double-digit sack figures again, then it'd be tough to not let him walk. But he just strikes me as a guy that's a Bill O'Brien guy through and through.
Yeah, he does strike me as that type of guy. I think he's anybody's team's guy. The problem with this, and I understand that you mentioned Jacob Martin as somebody to compare Mercilus to, but those two guys are night and day as far as what they're going to be required to do and asked to do in the defense. I think the better comparison would be to Brendan Scarlett because he does the job of setting the edge like Whitney Mercilus does in the run game, and he'll get his sacks here and there. But I think the problem for Whitney is that, and it's not a problem for Whitney, is the problem for the Texans is the chances of him coming back, I think, are slim because somebody else will pay him what he feels like he's worth. And even though he's a Bill O'Brien guy, I don't think he's going to pay him top dollar that he can get elsewhere at a different organization.
Big offseason, and according to Ian Rappaport, it'll be Bill O'Brien leading the 53, controlling the 53-man roster. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham coming up next. 5 o'clock fire, the biggest sports stories in the city of Houston on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.